Like to thank some of the people who help with our services nonstop. People like Jim and Greg and Lori and Tucker and Mark and Carrie and Maris. Did I leave anyone out? Terry, thank you. Wonderful people helping out each week. Thank you so much. I'm here this morning with Karen and my two sons, John and Mark. You remember, some of you who've been with Shoreline a long time, they were coming here when they were like 10 years old and 8 years old. You know, I remember John playing his violin when he was like 10 or 11, and Mark used to be involved in the dramas with Dale Moon. I'll always remember this one where they did this Sesame skit. They said something like, "This is brought to you by the letter A," or something. What letter was it, Mark? Do you remember? Okay. But just a wonderful skit. But these days, John is working as the band director up in Hart Public Schools, and Mark is in his last year at Central Michigan, majoring in English and computer science. So they were here this weekend, and I said, "You should come to the service," and they said, "Yes, we will do that." Well, I've entitled this message today, "Stay with the Boat." And the main idea here is keep your relationship with the Lord despite the struggles or the storms that come your way. God is faithful to keep his promises. And we'll get into that a little more, too, as we continue on. I was telling my coworkers, I saw some of them on Friday, that we were talking about our weekends, and I said that I was planning to do this message as part of my weekends. Is this on correctly, Mark? It just feels like an echo.
I just heard about there's feedback. We can hear you through the other
thing. Okay, so we're good? Okay. Yeah, I was telling my coworkers about this message I was doing, and that, you know, that I do a message like every 5 weeks, and I was telling them about the title, you know, "Stay with the Boat," and I said, I think I got the best passage in Acts, 27, the shipwreck. You know, how exciting. You know, it's like the juiciest passage. So I've been excited to share with you. And as I think about shipwrecks, I think of famous shipwrecks. You know, you think about the Titanic. That comes to mind immediately. I remember several years ago, we were on a vacation down in, where was that? Gatlinburg. And they have a Titanic Museum. I said, we got to go to this. And the thing I remember the most about the Titanic Museum, you know, they have artifacts and timelines and pictures, is they had this one room that was temperature controlled, where you go into this room, and it's the same temperature, like 50 degrees, that it was that night if you were on the Titanic's deck, you know, in the North Atlantic in April, 1912, I think. So you go in this room, it's dark, 50 degrees, just like it was at night. Then they got this little trough of water, and you can put your hand in, and it's 28 degrees, the same temperature as the North Atlantic when those people had to be in it. And I looked this up this morning. I was just looking at some Titanic trivia, and they said, how long can you last in 28-degree water? And it's only about 45 minutes, and that compounded the tragedy, of course. Other famous shipwrecks, I was thinking of Magellan's voyage. Does anyone know what Magellan's claim to fame is? He was a famous explorer. What's he known for the most? What did he do first? Jim's got it. Yeah, he's the first one to go around the globe in a ship. But it's a little bit of a misnomer because he didn't finish the voyage, as we're going to find out in a moment. But yeah, he was the first one to travel around the globe in a boat. You know, think of the same boat that Columbus sort of had. You know, he's sort of in the same time period. So 1519 to 1522 was his voyage. They left Spain with 5 ships and 270 men. And as they're going on this voyage, they wintered at the tip of South America, and that is now named after him, what's called the Strait of Magellan, because he went around the tip of South America. It was a dangerous and disappointing voyage. There's a mutiny when they were at the tip of South America. Two of the ships leave as part of this mutiny. And then they expected to cross the Pacific Ocean. And Magellan and the people in his crew thought it would only take them 3 to 4 days to cross the Pacific Ocean. You know, they didn't know. They were the first ones to do it. And In fact, it took them, instead of 3 or 4 days, it took them 3 months and 20 days. Instead of 3 or 4 days, their voyage across the Pacific was 110 days. And this was a horrible situation for these men because they run out of food, they run out of fresh water, they're eating old biscuits reduced to powder, they drink water that is yellow and stinking. Also, food was so scarce that they're eating sawdust. Rats were a delicacy if you could get them. And then also they would do things like, you know, on ships, there's a lot of rope, and they have pieces of leather on the rigging and stuff, so the ropes, when they go back and forth on the wood, they don't break, you know. So, but leather is made out of ox hide, and so they're taking all that stuff down. They're boiling it and barbecuing it. It just shows you how bad this 110-day voyage was. 30 died mostly of scurvy, and then the voyage finally landed on the island of Guam in 1521. Magellan dies in the Philippines with interaction with some natives, and only one ship of the five that originally left in 1519 makes it back to Spain. 19 survivors out of the original 270. So it was a horrible voyage, you know, but they did circumnavigate the globe. And they filled the boat up at some point when they were in the east in the Philippines with all these spices. And so even though one ship returned, it was still a financial success because those spices were so, so valuable. But imagine these 19 men who finally make it. They are like, they've got these long gray beards. They've aged unnaturally. There's a solemn procession to the church. They're just thankful to be alive. It was a tough voyage. Well, we're going to read about Paul's voyage today. His voyage was not that bad, but he does have a shipwreck as well, and it's a survival story of sorts. But let's just put it into context a little bit. We're at the end of Acts, you know, and Paul, who started out in Acts as a Jew who hated the church. He hated Christians. He was working for the Jewish leaders to arrest them, imprison them, and in some cases, he stood there while they were stoned. Well, Paul's going to have a conversion experience when the Lord meets him on the Damascus Road. He sees this blinding light. He can't see. The Lord says to him, "Saul, why are you persecuting me?" Through that experience, he becomes a Christian. And then he goes on to be a leader in the new church. So he went from persecuting the church to being a leader. He goes on 3 missionary journeys, which we've been hearing about the last few weeks. That's in the book of Acts, where he's sharing the good news. He's getting converts, not only with Jews, but also with Gentiles, non-Jews. But this causes problems with the Jewish leaders, especially when Paul goes back to the Jewish temple in Jerusalem. There's a riot, they arrest him, and the Jews want him killed because he used to be one of them. Now he's preaching the new religion, and he's offering it to Gentiles, non-Jews. So this creates a series of trials at the end of Acts. He's before the Roman governors, as we've been hearing about, because they're trying to figure out if there's some crime. And the Roman authorities say, there's no crime here. This is just matters of your religion. We're not going to do anything with this person. But Paul is a Roman citizen, and he appeals to Caesar. And according to the legal practices of that day, if you appeal to Caesar, you can go to Rome, apparently, and have your trial heard. So that is what Paul is going to do. And at the end of chapter 26, King Agrippa says, this man could have been set free if he had not appealed to Caesar. But Paul did, and so he's going to Rome, and it's just part of the Roman legal practices. Some more about the background. This event takes place in AD 59 to 60, Bible scholars think. It is while Nero is the emperor of Rome. After this, it's going to lead to Paul will make it to Rome, despite the shipwreck we'll talk about today. And he's going to be in house arrest in Rome for a couple years in 60 to 62 AD. And that's when he wrote the book of Philippians, Ephesians, Colossians, and Philemon. So it's important that Paul gets to Rome because we need that New Testament. He's going to be released from house imprisonment in Rome in about 62 to 64, where he's going to write Timothy, Titus. Bible scholars think he may have traveled to Spain. Then he returns to Rome in AD 64, and there he is martyred or executed under Emperor Nero's persecution of Christians. So that's still 4 or 5 years away, but just want to give you some of the timeline of where we are with this. Okay, let's talk about our passage a little bit. And on your outline, this is Sailing Part 1. Paul is handed over to this Roman centurion named Julius, and they sail up the coast from like Caesarea in today what would be Israel. They're going up the coast to a place called Sidon. They then continue north to the island of Cyprus and continue west along the coast to a place called Myra. Do we have this? Oh, thank you, Jim. I didn't know our map was up here. But yeah, this is a map of Paul's journey here. Let me see if I can point something out to you. So we're starting here in... Oh, thank you, Jim. This is great. Okay, so he's starting here in Caesarea, and then they're going to Sidon, as we mentioned, going this way to Myra. They're going to continue this way. And I'm not sure if it was easier to sail from here, like going this way over to Italy, because he needs to get to Rome. But instead, because of bad weather, they're going to be forced down here. And then really bad weather is going to take them on a 2-week journey to the island of Malta. So that's where we're going today a little bit. And thank you for that, Jim. Okay, let me get settled again here for a moment. Okay, so the first part of the journey, they're going to this town called Myra. And then there, the centurion Julius finds an Alexandrian ship, a grain ship. It's a very large ship. There are 276 people on board. Just a big Roman galley-type ship that's a cargo ship. They're making slow progress, and they sail south of the island of Crete due to the wind, and Paul says with difficulty. And they arrive at a place called Fair Havens on the island of Crete. And it's there, point number 3 on your outline, that they have to make an important decision. Sailing had already become dangerous. It's fall, like it is now. And you've probably heard this on Lake Superior, the worst month to sail is November. You know, that's when we lost the Edmund Fitzgerald and many other ships. Well, sort of like the Mediterranean in the fall, it's a dangerous sailing season. They sailed south of Crete due to the wind, and they arrived at a place called Fair Havens. But this is not much of a town, Fair Havens. They want to spend the winter somewhere, like 3 months or so. Fair Havens has nothing. So they have to make an important decision, and that's in verses 9 through 12. Sailing had already become dangerous, and Paul addresses the crew and the captain and the owner, and he says, this voyage is going to be disastrous. We should stay here at Fair Havens. And Paul just tells them he believes it's going to be dangerous. But they don't listen to him. The centurion talks to the captain of the ship and the ship's owner, and they say, you know, this place we're going is, let me get my laser pointer again. This place we're going is just down on Crete. We're just going a little bit on the island of Crete. We'll be in line of the coast the whole time. So they said, yeah, let's try it. So they decided to go to it, and they ignored Paul's advice. And keep that in mind, because later Paul's going to give them an advice, and they're going to take it because they realize we should have probably listened to you, Paul. So they hoped to sail to this town of Phoenix, which was just 30 miles away. So let me read to you a little bit, verses 13 through 19, what happens as they start their journey to Phoenix. When a gentle south wind began to blow, they saw their opportunity. So they weighed anchor and sailed along the shore of Crete. Before very long, a wind of hurricane force called the Northeaster swept down from the island. The ship was caught by the storm and could not head into the wind, so we gave way to it and were driven along. As we passed to the lee of a small island called Kadua, we were hardly able to make the lifeboat secure. And it's fascinating to read this stuff because the person who wrote Acts is Luke, also the one who wrote the Gospel of Luke. He's a doctor by profession. And his level of detail is just amazing. You know, he talks about, we went to the lee of this small island, and then we were afraid of running aground on the sandbars of Syrtis. It's just incredible detail here that he's talking about. And by the way, this distance of this journey that they're going to go on from Crete here to Malta, how long will that take, you're wondering? It's a different distance of 589 miles. So if you were driving, you'd be going from Grand Rapids to Washington, D.C. Some of you have made that trip. It's pretty long. But on a boat, it would be the same distance as, say, you start on your sailboat in Chicago, take it up to Traverse City, and then back. That's about 589 miles. So that's the distance they are going to go on here today. So let's see. So the storm was so bad that they began to throw the cargo overboard. On the third day, they threw the ship's tackle overboard with their own hands. And when neither sun nor stars appeared for many days and the storm continued raging, we finally gave up all hope of being saved. They were desperate. The crew loses hope. And this is something you don't do on your boat. You know, you throw the tackle overboard. That's, you know, your ropes, your other stuff. You know, this is desperate. You don't do that when you think you're going to make port somewhere. I know I see Steve back there. He's my sailor friend. So feel free to corroborate any of this, Steve. You probably never threw your tackle overboard, did you, with your own hands on your boat? Oh, he did once. Okay, yes. See. Accidentally. Okay, thank you. So they're in this difficult storm now. And keep in mind, in this big boat with 276 people on board, there's only so much the crew can do. They have sails, they have anchors, they have a rudder. But pretty much they got to go where the wind's going to blow. You know, they can do a little bit here and there. But this is desperate when you start throwing over the cargo. You know, so we've just lost all the money from the grain and the tackle and so forth. Well, let's continue. The storm continues, and they're going to go like 2 weeks. And in verse 21, Paul stands up and says, after they had gone a long time without food, 2 weeks, and I can tell you why they're not eating for 2 weeks. You know, if you're on a boat that's being battered, you know, some of you have been there, you're not going to want to eat when the boat is doing that, you know. So after going a long time without food, Paul stood up before them and said, men, you should have taken my advice. But now I urge you to keep up your courage, because not one of you will be lost. Only the ship will be destroyed. Last night, an angel of the God to whom I belong and whom I serve stood beside me and said, do not be afraid, Paul. You must stand trial before Caesar, and God has graciously given you the lives of all who sail with you. So keep up your courage, men, for I have faith in God that it will happen just as he told me. Nevertheless, we must run aground on some island. And you can be sure that in this desperate situation, they're all now listening to Paul. And then we get to the shipwreck, which is point number 6. And they're in the middle of the night. It's been 14 days. We haven't had food. We've been buffeted by these waves. And the sailors start doing soundings, which they can lower weights on ropes, and they see that land is approaching. 90 feet, they're getting land, or it started at 120, then they get to 90. So these sailors have ways to determine if we're getting close to land. It's midnight, though. So they dropped all four anchors not too far from Malta and prayed for daylight. Interesting archaeological note. In 1960, some archaeologists found four Roman stone anchors just to the east of Malta. And, you know, there's no way to say for sure that these were from Paul's boat, but I think it's pretty interesting. Okay, so then it's daylight is approaching, and Paul urges them all to eat. He says, you need your strength. You haven't had anything for 14 days. The angel has told Paul that they'll all be saved once they sort of have a shipwreck. But he wants them to eat so they have their strength. So he took some bread, just like we did at communion today. He broke it. He gave thanks in front of them. And then they all eat. And they ate as much as they wanted after 14 days. And they threw the rest into the sea. And that helps with this, my title of this, Stay with the Boat. I think the boat here is a metaphor for the church, for staying with the Lord. Because they're doing communion, just like you do in church here. And it's a wonderful metaphor that just tells us to stay with the Lord, stay with the church when things are difficult. And Paul got everyone back, everyone to safety, as we will see. So when daylight came, they did not recognize the land, but they saw a bay with a sandy beach, which they decided to run the ship aground if they could. But the ship struck a sandbar and it ran aground. And so this is point number 7 in our outline, the order to abandon ship. Some of the Roman soldiers wanted to execute the prisoners, like Paul, and I guess there were some other prisoners too, so they wouldn't escape, because the soldiers are responsible for the prisoners. But this centurion, who's been kind to Paul all along, he intervenes and says, no, everyone either swim to shore, because we can see it, or get a plank from this damaged ship and use that. And so everyone, all 276, made it to safety, just as the angel told Paul. Okay, well, that's our story. Now let's move into our so what section. The first thing I'm offering for you is to take advantage of opportunities. I think about this difficult voyage of 2 weeks of not eating, of people getting sick and thinking they're going to die. And I think, why did God not give Paul a smooth journey? You know, he could have just made this a beautiful cruise, you know, no problems. But then I thought, what an opportunity Paul had of these 276 people thinking they're going to die. And here's Paul giving them the words of life, you know, telling them that, you know, this is what you need to do to be saved. And so Paul has this opportunity, and I bet every one of those 276 people walked ashore, you know, as a new believer, just because Paul had them for 2 weeks in this captive audience. The captain, the centurion, I think all of them. And I wanted to just share a couple of verses that sort of illustrate this point. Ephesians 5:16 says, make the most of every opportunity. The days are evil. And Psalm 90, verse 12 says, teach us to number our days, that we may gain a heart of wisdom. I remember many years ago when I was a college student at Cornerstone University, and I was working this camp, Camp Minnewanka, up in Stony Lake. And it's not a Christian camp, but I just, series of circumstances, I found myself working up there. And every night, I want to say, each of the counselors, which I was one, we had to do something called Vespers, which was just sort of a encouraging thought that you would share with all the campers and staff. And so people were doing a lot of like what I would say was sort of like zany things. Like one guy played the Led Zeppelin song, Stairway to Heaven, and then proceeded to tell us what that meant, you know. And one guy wanted us all to pick up trash, you know, and then talked about the importance of picking up trash. And then I was on the schedule, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to tell these people about the Lord, you know, because anything is in bounds. And so I use the passage from Matthew, come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. And so I had my 10 or 15 minutes before everyone and just shared about that. And I look back on it, and it was just an opportunity, you know, an opportunity that I had, and the Lord helped me to be faithful and share with these people. I don't know what he did with that. I know he did something. You know, he says, my word does not come back to me void. You know, it will do what I want it to do. So take advantage of opportunities. A second point is to cling to hope when everything seems lost. And Paul did that. He encouraged the people. Everything seemed lost to them. And I think of Joseph's example from the Old Testament in Genesis 42, Remember, Joseph is sold by his brothers into slavery. He is accused of, you know, fooling around with Potiphar's wife. He's put in jail wrongly. But then at the end, when he finally becomes governor of Egypt and he confronts his brothers, you know, he tells them, do not be angry with yourselves for sending me here, because it was to save lives that God sent me ahead of you. So to him, everything seemed lost, but he continued to cling to hope. And then he saw eventually that the Lord was in it and was using him for this purpose. And Romans 12, verse 12 says, be joyful in hope, patient in affliction, faithful in prayer. I remember this came alive on one of our trips, to cling to hope when everything seems lost. A few years back, for Mark's graduation, we went on a trip to France, something I had always wanted to do since I was in high school French class. And so we went to celebrate Mark's graduation. And I remember we were on this, going to get on this train in this town of Nice in the south of France. And everything was right. You know, I saw it on the board. This was the time. We were on the right platform. And we're ready to go. And this train comes up and we get on it. And then we realize it's the wrong train. So we're in a country, we don't really speak the language. You know, I can do a little bit, Mark can do some. And I don't know where we're going. And I remember just praying. I'm like, Lord, you know, help us. We need some help here. And I remember then the train conductor came around and he's like, you know, we don't have tickets. And I said to him, you know, in my best French, est-ce qu'il y a une personne qui parle anglais? You know, is there anyone here who speaks English? He wasn't going to listen. He just wanted his 50 euros per person, which we had to pay. But just an example, you know, it turned out okay, because one of our later stops, we stopped just before the Italian border, and we looked over, and there was our Craig train. So we were able to just get off and get on that. And so the Lord helped us out through that situation. A third point I'd like to leave you with is to stay close to the Lord despite struggles. And this is the idea of staying with the boat. If you look at the U.S. Coast Guard directions, if you're ever having an emergency on the water, you know, say your boat tips over or something like that, they say stay with the boat. And I'm sure you know this, Steve. Hopefully that's never happened to you. But the Coast Guard, the rescuers can see you better if you're sitting next to a submerged boat. And most of those boats will not sink. They'll still float in some at some level. So you just have a much better survival chance if you stay with the boat. And I was remembering this struggle I once had. You know, the point here is to stay close to the Lord despite struggles. And Karen always appreciates this story. I remember I was like 27 or 28, and I was not married at the time, but I was interested, you know, and one relationship after another didn't seem to work out. And I had met Karen like a couple years before this, and we had went out on a date, had a nice time, I thought, you know. But then I had called her and asked her for a second date, and she said, no, I have a friend who's having emotional problems, so I can't go. And I thought, oh, that's the end, you know, she's telling me, you know, that's it. So I stopped pursuing her. But then like 2 years later, one of our mutual friends said, Ed, you really need to ask Karen out. And I'm like, no, I tried that. And then she like grabbed my arm and she's like, no, you really need to ask her out. So then I got the message, and yes, then I asked her out, and we were later engaged a few months later and so forth. But that was a struggle for me. And so that's the point. Stay close to the Lord despite struggles. And a verse here for you, Psalm 9, verse 9. The Lord is a refuge for the oppressed, a stronghold in times of trouble. And so keep that in mind. Keep strong the relationship with the Lord despite the struggles and storms of life. They will come, but He is faithful. He will keep His promises. Let's pray. Lord, we thank You for this time and Your many blessings to us. Thank you for the ways you uphold us during the struggles in life. Help us to stay true, to keep hope, because we know that you have a plan for us and that you supply all our needs. Thank you for this time. Amen.